And it's 11 o'clock. Very good morning to you. Time for a spotlight here at Red River Radio. Good morning to you. I'm Kermit Poling, General Manager here at Red River Radio. And I'm joined by three very special guests. Michael Butterman, of course, you hear him regularly here on Red River Radio, Music Director of the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra. Philip Lasser, composer whose work is being featured on tomorrow's concert. And Simona Dinnerstein, who you've heard many times here on Red River Radio, renowned pianist. I've heard certainly her award-winning Bach recordings here, and of course she's been featured many times on Performance Today as well. So good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. And Michael, I know you're kind of short on time today, so I'm going to let you jump in there and talk a little bit about the concert tomorrow.
Well, it's the season closing for the symphony this year, and we're, of course, thrilled to have Simona with us, who's offering a brand new work. This is a work that Philip wrote very recently for her. This is the these will represent the third set of performances of this brand new piece. I had the privilege of performing it with Simona last month. I guess it was a month and a half or so ago. In Boulder. It's a wonderful work. I'm sure you will be talking with Simona and Philip about it, but it is, I think, beautifully complemented on this program by music of Ravel and music of Dvorak. Philip, of course, is an American composer, but spent a lot of time studying in France. I think it's fair to say that there's a good bit of maybe French sensibility
French
in one way or another
about
his concerto. And so the idea of having some music of Ravel and with his beautifully orchestrated textures. And then while we don't have a work by an American composer, we have the New World Symphony of Dvorak, which is, I think you could argue, at least an American kind of sound or something that we associate with, with the New World anyhow. So this is a piece that, of course, many, many people know and love, and rightfully so. And it's also a piece that the second movement is by far the most famous. It's a piece that you probably know, even if you don't know that you know it. So again, a good piece to come and reacquaint yourself with, and then of course have the opportunity to hear a brand new work played by just an outstanding artist. It's a great opportunity for folks in Shreveport.
It is, and a rare opportunity that the composer gets to be here for the rehearsing and for the performances of the piece. Let me just ask you, because I know that Simona, you and Philip have a previous connection to this work, and maybe one of you can just talk a little bit about how the two of you connected up and started working together.
Mm-hmm. Well, Philip and I met probably a little over 10 years ago now, when I was playing with the cellist Zuhal Bailey, and Philip had written a cello sonata for him. So we played that together, and I met up with Philip, and he handed me the score to the 12 variations on a Bach chorale, which he had just written. And I listened to it, looked at it, and I fell in love with it. And I wound up performing that piece probably over 100 times, and I recorded it. And anyway, over the years, Philip and I became really, really close friends, and he's written other pieces for me as well, a violin and piano piece called the Chaconne Variations, and he wrote a song for Tift Merritt and myself that we did. And then we talked about the idea of him writing a piano concerto, and it is more beautiful than I could even have imagined it would be. So it's a tremendous honor for me to have this piece, to have had it written for me.
Yeah, and I'll just say, from experiencing one rehearsal, basically, and spending a little bit of time with the score, that it it's a very virtuosic piece, but it's not one that slaps you in the face with like, oh, here we are, we're going to hear this virtuosic piece. It's a work where it seems to me that the piano and the orchestra have so much going back and forth. And Simona, I know you're really associated with the music of Bach and your various recordings, but the piano writing actually seems to reflect that as well as the different aspects that Michael was talking about.
That's very true. I feel that I wrote the concerto with Simona completely in mind. The beginning of the piece had been written several years before and not for Simona, but I had never, in other words, I had started a piece that I wanted to write as a concerto for piano, and for various reasons just did not continue it, and I had maybe 6 minutes of it. And I knew the color world that I wanted, and I knew, of course, I've always had the love of the music of Bach and Debussy and Schumann, or these sort of fathers in a way of my music, and I guess have always been. And when Simona had approached me about the idea of doing the concerto, it all gelled very quickly on the notion for me to write a Bach-like concerto that was not a Baroque-style concerto.
Yeah.
And also, I've, for so many, let's say all of my pieces, I try to question the standard way of doing things. And concerto was for me the biggest complex issue of how to write a meaningful work today in concerto form. I didn't want to do a Baroque style concerto, and I certainly was not interested. My music is not showy, so I thought, well, I don't want to do a virtuosic piano part in a mm-hmm. sort of Rachmaninoff style. And so I was faced with a dilemma of, in a sense, well, I know all the things I don't want to do. I'm not sure I know what I want to do. And the discovery process for me of writing the concerto was so involved in discovering, first of all, that not just the sound world that Simona can create, but also the whole articulation of the love of music regardless of style. And when she plays Bach, for example, it's not either sounding like Bach per se or any other composer per se, but it's very honest and very direct mm-hmm. In its sonority. And so it gave me at least a conduit that I could ride on when I was writing. So I tried to write a piece that was neither virtuosic, in a sense, overtly, although I think it's a fairly difficult piano part, but it's not overtly so.
Right.
And also, I didn't want an orchestra that has the we-they approach to either a competition with the piano or an argument with the piano. And so I settled on the notion of a holographic image, that is, that the orchestra sort of emanates from the piano and takes little elements and little snippets of sound that she plays and sort of casts them in color around her. And it was but very challenging, needless to say, to both from the creative point of view and also from the orchestrational point of view, to get that into form. And however, it was the challenge that made me stimulated in writing the piece.
Simona, you mentioned that there was a far more beautiful piece than you ever could have imagined, and that is, I think, from the initial notes, the very, very beginning of the work. You are struck with the beauty that's really within this work. And I think a lot of people will think, oh, contemporary work, they're not necessarily going to think, oh, they'll think maybe this is going to be energetic, something like that. But it is absolutely gorgeous, beautiful writing in that. And I think that pervades the piece. What I was curious about is where the title of the work, I mean, it's Piano Concerto, obviously, but then you have this other subtitle, and maybe you could explain that a little bit.
Well, that's a very good question, and always dangerous for the composer to start talking about. mostly because I don't want to direct anyone in a way to thinking. The title, The Circle and the Child, is not necessarily a programmatic one. Yeah. It's not about children, I think, and it's difficult to be about a circle. So that being said, I believe that it sets, hopefully, the mood of the piece as far as where I think one, or I'm hoping one, will go when one hears the piece. I like the notion that we travel in circles in music, that is, that we travel from a beginning back to a beginning. And as we do that, we learn through hearing and then hearing things again, slightly shaded, slightly changed by the experience of listening. It's a metaphor for life, which I firmly believe is a cyclical event, and therefore allows us to go into our own memories and see how memory changes over time and how things that come back to us, whether they be memories or events that happen again, change over time because of that fact of time, which is both moving forward but also returning us back to things that we know through memory. And I feel that in that sense, the circle is a metaphor for that. And the child is a metaphor for the ceaseless return of life.
Michael, before you have to go dodging off to television land, if you could just say a little bit about why, because you had to discover the work, the composer, and the particular work. What prompted you in that direction, and how did you come to the conclusion of putting this particular program together as a whole?
Well, you know, Simona and I began an email discussion year and a half or longer ago, and she informed me that there was this new piece that was going to be available, and sent me a MIDI version of it, and the minute that it started, those initial notes, yaga daga dum, it's just beautiful,
yeah.
As you said, and that's what struck me, and as I listened to it more, I thought this is music that. You know, I'm always careful when I'm choosing new music for an audience, because I realize they only have one shot at hearing this music, and I as a conductor, you know, have a long, long time to study a piece of music and get to know it and get into it and so on. But most people they have one shot at it, and this is the kind of piece that I think yields great benefits the longer you spend studying it. But at the same time, it's beautiful on first hearing. It's something that you, I think, hear and appreciate. And that's what I was looking for when deciding whether this would be an appropriate piece to share with our audience here. And I really felt that it was. And then, of course, the sort of, even though there's a lot of Bachian kinds of elements, the French approach to color, perhaps that suggested the combination of this Ravel and then, if you want to call it American music, of the Dvorak, to complement the piece. So I think it's certainly a program that I'm very much looking forward to. I have to say also that, you know, as a conductor, it's so exciting to be able to have a composer right there. We spend, Kermit, we spend so much of our time thinking about and making our best guess as to what a composer really wants, because the notes on the page can only really tell you so much. And a lot of times you are just making your best guess.
Right.
But, I mean, literally now I can turn around and say, well, do we have that right?
What do you think, Mr.
First of all, you do get it right. And it's been a pleasure to hear you learn the work and get the orchestra to be inspired to perform the work. And I have to say that your visceral understanding of my music has, it's very moving for me to see that it does speak to you and that you do understand, in a sense, the meaning far beyond the notes that can express them, because again, as you said, a composer is really quite limited, as it turns out, on the page. It's difficult to cast what you want. In fact, I would argue it's impossible to cast what you want, and it's so dependent upon the sensitivity of the conductor for this particular work, and I feel that you have very much captured the beauty of that piece and the way I would hope that it would be heard.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I know you have some other things you want to discuss with, but before I go, could I mention the concert on Sunday as
Absolutely.
Well?
Absolutely. I was hoping you would.
Right. So we have the wonderful privilege of being able to hear Simona not only with the orchestra on Saturday, but also in recital on Sunday afternoon at Centenary College at the Anderson Auditorium, 3 o'clock p.m. This is part of the Noel Foundation Chamber Music Series. It's the last of our four concerts this season, and it will be an all Bach afternoon.
Exciting.
And of course, Simona has just released a new recording of Bach 2 and 3 part Inventions, and she's
right.
going to be
top of the Billboard charts, if I have that right. Yeah, that's congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, in fact, all the 2 part Inventions were played. I think it was just a week or so ago here on. One of the classical, maybe it was Classical 24, but in any case, we heard them not that long ago. But now you can hear them live on Sunday afternoon, along with Jennifer Carcillo, violinist, and Simona playing together the C minor violin sonata of Bach, and some of the Goldberg variations. Now, Simona made a big splash with her Goldberg recording a few years ago. So she's going to now get to hear, I don't know if you've ever heard that string trio arrangement
yes,
of these
yeah.
by Dmitri Sitkovetsky for violin, viola, and cello. So they're going to play the aria, a few variations, and then the reprise of the aria, which will be a nice three-part Bach afternoon. So, and that's an absolutely free concert, so I hope folks will take advantage of that as well.
Right, Sunday afternoon, the Hurley School of Music. And, of course, the other concert we're talking about is tomorrow evening, and that's with the Shreveport Symphony. And, Michael, thanks for that. And, Simone, if you don't mind talking a little bit more about the piano concerto, about Philip's piece, you were here a little bit earlier and recorded a couple of excerpts from the concerto, and I think it would be really interesting for people to hear a little bit of the work and for you to give us a little explanation as to what it is that we're going to hear.
Yes. Well, I think that Philip has talked about this, and so has Michael, but this concerto is extremely unusual in that it's really a work of poetry and, in a sense, chamber music between the piano and the orchestra. It's not showy. We tend to associate concertos with being very bravura pieces. And there are very, very, very few piano concertos that are like this. I mean, I could think of maybe, I don't know, I would think maybe Beethoven's fourth piano concerto comes to mind. And, you know, I can't even think of other concertos, piano concertos, that have this quality where the pianist is not necessarily drawing attention to the piano.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't end loudly. There's not any loud movement, really. I chose a couple of excerpts to play here in the studio that I think work without hearing the orchestra, though of course the orchestra is extremely important all over the place, but I think this gives you a sense of the kind of sound and language of the concerto. So the first excerpt is from the first movement, and there's this section in the middle that is slightly darker and very fluid and extremely expressive, so I thought that you would enjoy hearing this.
Okay. Pianist Simone Dinnerstein performing just a short excerpt from a new work by Philip Lasser, and The Circle and the Child, a piano concerto that she'll be performing tomorrow evening with the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra. And I think really that little brief minute and a half that we heard here pretty much accentuates what you've both been talking about in this work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one of my favorite parts of the piece, and it's not just that it's beautiful, but it's music that really speaks in a very deep way to me, and
mm-hmm.
I think it does to many people that hear it as well, and we kind of don't expect that from new music, for it to speak to us in that way, and I hope that people are going to be open to hearing something like this. It's just so, it's unique to hear a piece of music written like this for piano and orchestra.
Sometimes I think that, at least in our period of time that we live in, we've gotten these perceptions of what contemporary music should sound like that are left over from the middle of the last century, when mm-hmm. it's like composers went out of their way to shun the conventional, more conventional languages that were available to them, to the point of, for some people, getting so far into the avant-garde that they just really didn't want to hear a contemporary work. But one thing I really like that I had mentioned to Philip when he walks in, hey, you're not afraid to write in C major occasionally. It's not just C major, but it's having the whole palette of all of these different tonalities and colors available. Now, I mean, this is the 21st century. I mean, we have evolved in contemporary perception, and what I really admire about the piece is that you include elements of all of this, a full palette.
That's true, and I feel that, first of all, style is of not much interest to me, as far as I feel that it's more an issue of voice. Mm-hmm. I think a composer should find a voice, and yeah. I think I'm evolving my voice, and it's a process for me of distillation rather than of compilation, if I can put it that way. I try to distill what I'm getting across. I try to be as efficient, in a sense, as possible, and I do feel that one of the problems that happens in the contemporary world is that people confuse the surface sound of a piece with architectural issues for the work, that is, how the piece is put together. In fact, I feel one of the great difficulties for me in writing was that I was trying to challenge the typical way that a piece evolves in normal so-called classical music. Mm-hmm. I tried to write, in a sense, a non-linear work, a work that circles back on itself with little snippets that are effectively like little. Simona mentioned the idea of poetry, and they're symbols for me. Little symbols that come back, and the different order in which they come, or how one is complemented from the other, or changed ever so slightly. It's an effort of enormous detail, but actually the sum total is a rather modern, actually non-linear way of developing music. I feel that I learned some of that from things that I saw in Debussy, for example, who I call a mosaic composer, mosaicist, where there are little bits of units of music, and each one is very colorful in and of itself, and they're put one right next to one another, and all together they come and create an image. But it is, in a sense, a nonlinear way of composing, and I took that further with the idea that how we remember things affects enormously how we experience a work. And I think that as a result, in fact, the form and the way the music unfolds is quite original. I'm very proud of the way that it unfolds. It doesn't have, in a sense, that linear direction that I was desperately trying to avoid. And mm-hmm. But of course, it evolves in some way, but I think in a poetic way and not necessarily in a linear way.
Right, right. Poetry. I think it's a great summary of the work. Simona, why don't you say a little something about this next excerpt here?
Well, the whole piece is based on a Bach chorale, and sometimes you hear it, sometimes you don't. Some of it is underneath in sort of the bones of the music. But in the second movement, it is really clearly stated. So I chose a part. This is the first piano entrance of the second movement, where I start to play the chorale, and then it develops into Philip's own world.
Okay. Thank you. part of the second movement of The Circle and the Child, a piano concerto by Philip Lasser, who composed this work for pianist Simona Dinnerstein, who will be performing it with the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra tomorrow evening at Riverview Theater in downtown Shreveport. This has been a slightly longer spotlight than we've had, but I think it's been a really interesting discussion. And before we wrap it up here, any last thoughts that you'd like to express about the work from either one of you?
Well, I wanted to say something actually that I think is interesting. I mentioned earlier that I performed Philip's 12 variations on a Bach mm-hmm. chorale many times and recorded it. And what was really remarkable was that Philip sold several hundred copies of his score. So in other words, people were buying the music to learn it themselves. Now that might sound, you know, you might think, well, maybe that's normal. But actually, it's really not normal to do that for a new piece of music, for people mm-hmm. to seek out playing it for themselves. And it used to be that the way that we learned music was not by listening to recordings or even going to concerts, but by playing music for ourselves. Right. And I think that there's something quite powerful about the fact that so many people sought to buy his music because they wanted to experience the music themselves. And I think that I imagine this will happen with the concerto too. So,
I think so. I think it's definitely going to be a work that that people want to hear again and again. And Philip, I want to thank you for being here too, and
thank
also
you.
And also coming in. I think it's a terrific work. I thought it was beautiful from the first time I looked at it, and then I had the opportunity to hear a recording, I think, of the initial performance, and I thought this is just a great piece.
I remember a double bassist who had said to me from the first performance, he said, you know, what I really like about your music is you seem to go seamlessly from extremely tonal or consonant music to extremely dissonant music, and there is no separation from one to the other. And that was a very big compliment for me, because I sort of seamlessly go through these things, and I don't see them as separate issues or separate styles.
Well, the performance is tomorrow evening. That is at 7:30 p.m. Riverview Theater in downtown Shreveport, a program that also includes music of Maurice Ravel and the very well-known New World Symphony of Antonín Dvořák. So if you are someone that really likes to be in your comfort zone and hear something very familiar, well, you have that as well. Probably one of the best-known symphonies in all the orchestral repertoire. Information is available at shreveportsymphony.com. You can also call 318-227-8863. That is 227-TUNE, the tune line of the symphony. And also a reminder that on Sunday afternoon, another performance, a free performance at the Hurley School of Music, and Simone will be playing music of Bach that we've talked about, along with members of the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra. So again, thanks to both of you for being here. Michael had a runoff, but thanks to him, he's probably in his car on his way to his destination here. He's got a very busy day. And if you are with an organization and you have an event coming up, you'd like to be featured on a future 1001 Spotlight here at Red River Radio, just give us a call at 800-552-8502. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.